Today on The Grave Talk, surviving the afterlife. After suffering from a debilitating disease that nearly took his life, Mike Bloomfield discovered that there is more to this life and the afterlife than he ever imagined. Seeing himself on the operating table and coming back to this earth to continue breathing, something had to change. A door had been opened to the other side. Who and what Mike began to see and hear from would forever change his perspective on our world. This is his story of survival and a journey to better understand the afterlife.
What happened to me was I was a severe alcoholic, and I went through a couple of divorces and decided I was going to drink myself to death, and I managed to do that. My main artery to my liver erupted, and I was bleeding to death internally. I went to Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio, and they had to do emergency tip surgery on me. They bypassed my liver. They gave me a 60-40% chance of making it through. Mm-hmm. I surprised them. But during that time, I had the out-of-body experience. I actually was like floating. It's hard to explain. I was like floating, like out of the corner of the room, like, and then I find myself like in the hallway, like looking through the window at them working on me. Mm-hmm. And everything was super bright white. I mean, it was the calmness. It's indescribable. I mean, you can't even put it into words. There was no fear. Nothing. I mean, nothing. I can't even describe it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're at peace.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing to say, because one would almost assume if you're looking at yourself being worked on, you're kind of having the realization that you're out of body.
I didn't realize it was me.
Oh, really? Okay.
Until I actually seen me.
Okay. So when you saw you, that I think it would freak a lot of people out, and it wouldn't be a moment of calm. It'd be a moment of, how am I over here yet over there at the same time? Tell me, how did that kind of turn to calmness for you?
It was the brightness of the white. Mm-hmm. The whiteness of everything was like super bright white.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if there was this light at the end of this tunnel that they're talking about, but everything, I just felt all at ease, at peace. Mm-hmm. You know? And I don't know how to explain it. Mm-hmm. It's just, from there on, it just, I don't know. It seemed like whatever happened to me, I become some sort of a magnet or something to them. I can feel them. Mm-hmm. When I'm around them. I can basically walk in, and I know when they're there.
Yeah. Prior to having to have that emergency surgery, what was your outlook on the whole concept of ghosts and paranormal and things of that nature?
I really didn't have to believe one way or the other. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certain things, you know, everybody wonders about.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wasn't, you know, into the paranormal.
Sure, just another thing out there.
It, you know, because, you know, that amazes you, you know?
Yeah.
But I wasn't into it or okay. anything like that.
Sure.
But what got me is I'm thinking it was six. I got a short-term memory loss due to this.
Uh-huh.
I get my long-term memory's fine. But what got me into this really was I moved shortly after my surgery. I moved into this apartment. I was about six to nine months into the apartment. And the whole time, within a 6 months, there was stuff that just wasn't adding up. You know, you'd walk in, set your keys down, and you turn around, pick your keys back up, and they're not there.
Uh-huh.
They'd be over here. You're like, what the heck, you know?
Yeah.
So you, or you take your shoes off, and you know you took your shoes off there, and you find them over here. I mean, it was just tricks being played with your mind, it seemed like to me. And I thought it was me.
Sure.
And so I went about it as thinking, you know, it's after a surgery, mm-hmm. it's just because your liver has a lot to do with your mind.
Okay.
And your liver controls basically almost everything on your body. I don't know if you guys realize this or not, but it does. It controls the way you think, everything.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, I'm thinking it's due to my liver.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just misplacing this, misplacing that.
Sure.
So, well, it goes on. And then, I don't know, about a year into living there, it was about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and I have these white sheer curtains. And I live on the second story. There's three doors to get into my apartment, and there's only one set of steps that goes to my apartment. There's no fire escape or anything else. It's that one staircase that goes up to my apartment, and it has three doors. All three doors lock. So this one night I get up to use the restroom. It's like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I go from my bedroom, I have to go through the dining room, or the living room, into the kitchen. Well, off from the kitchen is the bathroom. It's an offset of the kitchen. So I'm basically walking through my whole entire apartment to get to the restroom.
Yeah.
So I go from one end to the other end, and I'm sitting there on the toilet. And you know how you catch something on the corner of your eye, and you know you've seen something, you look, and it's not there.
Sure.
Well, this was happening. I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden, I look over, and there's this shadow figure. It slowly steps out. And the only part that you can't see is probably one leg, and that was only about half of that one leg that you couldn't see.
Yeah.
The rest of its body was outside, so you can see. It stepped that far out, and it just stood there, and it turned its head slowly, like it was looking around.
Mm-hmm.
And then it slowly stepped back to where I couldn't see it again. I thought, what the heck did I just say?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it did it again a few seconds later. It steps out. This time it stepped further out where everything was shown except for the ankle of one leg. And it did the exact same thing. It turned its head slowly, was looking around. But this time it turned its head and looked directly at me. And then step back into the doorway. I about lost it. I jumped up off that toilet, went running around that corner to see what the heck it was. And there was nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
It was not there. Well, I checked all three of the doors, still locked. No one in the apartment. no way for it to get out.
Yeah.
And the reason why I was able to see this so clear is I have white sheer curtains. And at the outside streetlight, I'm on the second story, where the outside streetlights are shining almost directly into your apartment. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And nobody can see in because it's dark in your apartment, but you can see out perfectly.
Sure.
And it lights up the whole inside of your apartment like it's daylight. So, I mean, it was clear. And yeah. I wasn't, but I don't know, about 10 foot away from it. And I thought, wow. And I just didn't tell no one. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. Ghost Hunters was out, just starting out. I mean, I started watching it, and then it seemed like the more I watched Ghost Hunters, the more activity started to happen around the place. And only when Ghost Hunters was on. I was like, what the hell?
It's almost you like know? Triggering
it. Was like
it.
Reacting to yeah. Ghost Hunters. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right. So, anyways, there was an old lady downstairs that she passed away, but I seen her every day for like 3 years that I lived there upstairs. She passed away of a massive heart attack, and I told her, I said, if you ever need anything, I said, just knock on the ceiling with your broomstick. I'll come down and help you in any way I can.
Sure.
She said, oh, okay, Mike. So this one night, I thought I heard a thump on the floor. Mm-hmm. She ain't never did it before. I mean, so I wasn't for sure.
Yeah.
And sure enough, she had a massive heart attack and passed away. And
how long ago did she have the heart attack when you heard that thumping?
It was that night.
So it was very, very, it's like yeah. she had the heart attack and then thump, thump.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it, I mean, they said it was so severe that the thump was probably her hitting the floor.
Okay.
And her head actually hit the counter and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So... they said she was dead before she hit the floor. Anyways, after she passed, another couple moved in, and they was there shortly. And he OD'd and passed away in the same apartment.
Oh, my gosh.
So the apartment became empty again.
Yeah.
And I decided to take it.
Okay.
Because it's a bigger apartment. It was downstairs. I had a yard.
Did you have any reservations, though, about going into a place where, you know, two people just died?
My outlook was, you know, it's not the it's the living that's going to harm you, not the
sure.
dead, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyways, I went ahead and I moved in, and I wasn't there shortly. I was on my computer one night, and it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to go to the kitchen and get me a glass of water or something to drink. So I have this hallway. It's the exact same system that's set up upstairs that's downstairs, only the kitchen and the bedroom was backwards.
Uh-huh.
So I go from the bedroom to the kitchen to get me something to drink. As I'm turning the corner, there's a switch I can hit from the hallway to turn the kitchen light on.
Yeah.
So as I'm turning, I hit the switch and turn, and there stood this old lady.
And so, it was the same old lady that used to be your neighbor.
Right. And I seen her every day for 3 years.
When she
was standing there with yeah. her arms out, and there was this figure of a man or something behind her standing. I couldn't make out its face it was all like a blur and all squiggly, like I couldn't make it out. But the way, it didn't dawn on me until afterwards, the way she was standing with her arms out and down, like she was holding him back.
Okay, because that was going to be my next question, is what sort of, you know, vibe did you get from her? Was it, I'm okay, hi?
Yeah. Whatever that thing was, I believe she was holding it back.
Interesting. Holding it back from her, or holding it back from you?
From protecting me.
Okay.
Wow. I believe.
Yeah. Did you ever get to find out any more of the history of that apartment that dated back further?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yeah. Come to find out, a guy, he never did write me back, but he said that he lived there for several years when he was a kid. And the guy that I'm talking about, his name is Charlie. Mm-hmm. And he was like an old Civil War soldier or something. And that whole area where my apartment was is associated with the Underground Railroad, mm-hmm. All that stuff.
Yeah. So there's a lot of history with that building. I'm wondering, you know, how many other deaths had occurred either in that unit or on that area right there, you know, in the past.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's all the whole town where this apartment is.
Yeah.
The whole town is sitting on top of Native American Indian mounds, the Hopewell Indian mounds.
Sure.
And between that and the Underground Railroad,
yeah,
I believe it stirred up enough activity in that area. I mean, I've got video. That whole city is just a hot spot.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Something I wonder about, and this is just kind of an opinion type question. When you have a setting like that where there's a series of deaths back to back, or even more than that, all unrelated, and all, you know, things that you know, could easily be explained, heart attack, you know, someone overdosed. Right. Obviously, we have free will, we have choices and all of that. But it makes me wonder sometimes, environments that have a series of deaths at them in different ways, shapes, and form, is it chicken before the egg? Is there something that influenced those events to take place? You know, did something maybe scare her so much, or give her that heart attack? Did something really put a depressive thing on the other gentleman who ended up overdosing? Were there other influenceable factors that, yes, people died their own ways, but how often is there kind of something else at play that, you know, kind of gets you to that point, you know, to the
exactly
edge?
Yeah, like the guy contacted me and said that the guy that's in there, his name's Charlie.
Yeah.
You know, how long has he been there?
Yeah.
And a lot of non-believers, there's a lot of believers, thanks to ghost hunters, believe it or I don't care what anybody thinks, they actually brought it out, so we're able to talk, you know?
Sure, it's one of the bigger things that kind of made it more right. Palatable.
Well, see, it took me 4 years to tell anyone my story, because I was afraid what people would think,
sure,
say, you know.
Well, what were you?
I just said, to heck with it, and I started American Ghost Stories with my story.
Yeah.
And it just went from there.
What were you thinking, you know, over those 4 years before you actually went out and said anything? Were you wondering, you know, is there something wrong with me? You know, did I do too much damage to myself with the drinking? And now this is, you know, this part of my brain that's firing this way. And yeah, it sure seems like a ghost, but is it really? Is it just, you know, is there something psychological going on? You know, did you wonder that for a period of time before you accepted and realized that it was something that was ghostly?
I don't know. I just really never really talked to anybody because they either believed me or they didn't. I mean, if they didn't, there wasn't a lot of people would come and tell me they didn't believe me.
Sure.
Because I used to be an alcoholic and I used to be a crazy, you know, a little bit nuts, but I was out there. I was a fighter for a while. So
when you were able, was there a specific person you decided to tell this to?
No, there wasn't a whole lot of people really to tell. I mean, mm-hmm. I have family. I got a large family, but I mean, they all believe in paranormal because it's real, I guess. I know it's real now. I mean, there ain't no denying it now. I mean, God.
So when you saw that shadow,
once you see it, it's like you've been lied to your whole life.
When you saw that shadow figure in that bathroom that day, what was you know, were you feeling any emotions from it? Were you feeling?
No, it just blew my mind. I was like,
okay.
No. Yeah. You know, I was kind of denying it, if anything.
Sure.
No, I'm not seeing this.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reason why I jumped up and went around the corner. No, it ain't around here.
So
and it wasn't.
When you're having these experiences in your house and you're seeing these things, and then you go out into public and in other locations, are you having experiences there as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually went to, it's called the Octagon. It's an Octagon house in Circleville, Ohio. Mm-hmm. I actually went in there and I was doing an investigation. And I don't know what happened. It was like I had a panic attack, anxiety attack, and a heart attack all at the same time. I mean, it was like, it scared the shit out of me. I went downstairs and went outside, and as soon as I walked out that door, it was like, it was gone.
Yeah.
But I go home later on that night, I'm going through my footage and my evidence. Exact same spot that I was standing in when I had that anxiety attack or whatever it was, there was a shadow figure. I caught it coming out of the wall, manifesting out of the wall. I got it on video.
So you think that panic attack or whatever it was that kind of overtook you was very much influenced by...
I don't know whether I was pushed.
Yeah.
Or what happened?
Yeah.
Something was physically touched me.
Yeah,
I know that.
And then once you were out of that house, it's like a switch turned off, and suddenly you were feeling just
fine. It was
fine.
Gone.
Yeah,
it was completely gone.
Yeah. You said earlier that you feel like you're a magnet for ghosts. Let me ask you about that a little bit. Are you a magnet for any type of ghost? Are you a magnet for anything that may be anywhere at any given time? Or is there certain types of entities that seem to be attracted to you?
I believe they know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, some of them don't. I've got them where they ask who... I've got video evidence where they're talking to each other. Because... One's asking one, the other, who are they? Asking who we are.
Yeah.
Who are they? Well, that's one spirit asking another spirit who we are.
Tell me about that. What kind of evidence do you have that shows that? Because I always find that idea and these pieces of evidence that I've heard over the years like that very, very compelling.
What I did was a public investigation. Both of them was at the Octagon House, both videos. One was the Octagon House, and the other one's the Return of the Octagon House. But the Octagon House, you listen to that, you crank that up, you listen to them voices that's in there. Mm-hmm. There's only me and another guy upstairs. That's it. That's all's upstairs. Mm-hmm. Just two of us. And you'll see what I'm talking about. I mean, it's plain and simple. You'll hear it all the way through there.
It's interesting. So, based on what you've experienced, do you believe that, you know, they're on the other side, just like we're on our side, and we can interact with one another at random? Are they able to do the same, do you think?
Well, the voices I caught, one was asking, well, was saying, little girl needs help. Like I said, who are they?
Yeah.
Help me up. I don't know whether somebody fell over the banister right there at where I caught that at. There's mm-hmm. a banister, wraparound banister.
Yeah.
And you'll hear a voice says, help me up. That's all in this one video.
Yeah.
And then you go to the Return of the Octagon, and I actually catch a shadow figure coming out of the wall on it.
Are there times where you personally experience things or hear things when you're investigating that you think will show up on camera or on audio, and when you go back and look at it, they're just not there?
I've heard voices. I went back, and Dave was right there where I heard the voices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, for someone like you who seems to be more sensitive than most, if for many, they look back on tapes and go, oh, they're picking up all these things that they didn't see in real time. If you would be looking back going, well, I experienced a lot more than that while we were there, and not everything is showing up.
Well, most of my findings is when I go through my evidence.
Yeah.
Most of it, I don't even know is happening.
Sure. So let me ask you this. After you started realizing there's things going on around you after your surgery, and you just kind of stay silent for those 4 years, trying to kind of make sense of what's going on. How did you decide, I want to go investigate ghosts?
It's not that I want to investigate. I need to know.
Okay. What do you need to know? What were you looking for specifically?
I don't know. I still don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just searching for answers.
I guess, what sort of answers are you searching for? Because if we're coming to it from the angle of they exist and you're having these experiences, the question would be, you know, if you believe it, and it's not a matter of you need to prove it to someone else, I guess, what sort of questions do you have out there for the world of spirits?
I just wonder, you know, like everybody else, how far it goes. You know, hey, we're energy. We live forever. You can't kill energy.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, where did we go from here?
Yeah. When you came back from your surgery and you started having these experiences, this is something I wonder about. You know, was something opened up that made you more sensitive? Or when you were kind of on the other side for a moment or two, did something or things, multiple, kind of follow you back out of that place? And that's why you have this energy around you, or these things that seem to be around you, or do they kind of change depending on where you're physically located?
Nah, I feel like there's a purpose why they chose me. I don't know if I was pre-chosen or what, but I think there's a reason why I was chosen. I don't know what it is, but I think they got something there for me, I guess. I don't know. I really don't know.
So when you decided to start looking into to spirits and look for answers and in investigate and things of that nature, did you have locations you wanted to go to? Did you have, did you want to be there for people who were having experiences and go into private homes? Yeah. What was going on in your mind at that point in time?
I want to be there for people, you know?
Okay.
But also, I want to explore myself.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Mike. In part two, does Mike think that the level of activity at an investigation is affected by the people investigating the location or the number of people investigating a location? Why do some spirits need human intervention to move on? And what kind of ground rules do they operate on when haunting a location? Those questions and more in part two. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brisky. Thanks for listening.